This is the World Soccer Talk podcast. That's right. I am Nick Webster. You can follow me on Twitter at Nick Webster. And there's no Premier League this week. Boo hoo. But we do have the FA Cup. But before we get into the FA Cup, it's time to introduce the crew. We've got the one, the only Nicky Hollander, who's still like a dog with two cocks after Solomon Kalou brought home the African Cup of Nations medal, which completed his collection, didn't it, Nicky?
It did. Come on, you orange elephants. Yes, he completed his collection. The only thing he's got left to do now is sign for the Galaxy, Nate.
Ah! Well, that brings us to the coach of the year in Redding, California, Nate Aburea. He's got his JV team. They are humming, I believe, Nate.
Oh, that's right. We had our nice six-match unbeaten streak. And, yeah, it always kills me that players that I want to like and I want to root for, they somehow find their way to that disgusting thing that I despise down there in Los Angeles known as the Galaxy. All of you players that I like out in the world, play for someone else in America. Please, please.
We're going to find a team in the MLS in Reading, mate, just for you.
We're starting one up. That's right. Reading FC coming to MLS 2019. Love it.
And then there's our favourite Chardonnay sodden West Ham lover, Robin Burt. Robin, I know we've been commiserating over England getting thrashed by the Aussies in the World Cup.
Yeah, the same old thing. It just happens a different time of the year. Yeah, but I think we'll come good in the World Cup. I think we'll get into the semis, hopefully.
Oh, the semis, if only the English national team could do such a thing. Last week, we spoke about two managers, Ari Redknapp, who, with his dodgy Bertie me, has decided to call it a day at QPR. And, of course, QPR then go to Sunderland and get a remarkable midweek victory. And the Mr. Pearson over at Leicester City, somehow he's managed to keep hold of his job. But this is the Premier League, and when you lose games, you lose your job. So before we get to the FA Cup, we have to talk about Paul Lambert and his demise at Aston Villa. The great thing about Lambert, and this is English football to a T, so we'll start with you, Bertie, is that Aston Villa started the season. They were, in fact, top of the league. I think they won three of their first four. And because they won three of their first four, Aston Villa rewarded Lambert with a three-year contract extension until 2018, which they now have to pay out on. This seems to be well overdue in my book. I mean, Villa have been going through one of the worst runs that I can possibly remember, falling into the relegation zone. Paul Lambert, your thoughts on him and your thoughts on Tim Sherwood, and we'll bounce that one over to Nicky after you finished.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, when they won their first three games, you know, I mean, you're assuming that everything is going swimmingly well, and then he signs this new deal, the same long-term deal they got Pardew in trouble after he had a good run at Newcastle. So yeah, I think it was well overdue, and now's the time to make that change as well, like 13 games to go. So they definitely had to do that. And as far as Sherwood is concerned, I believe at halftime in the game today against Leicester, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later, he actually had quite an effect in the dressing room. So, you know, I think he's a good move for them, because I think they need someone to kick him up the arse, and he's definitely going to give them the hairdryer treatment once in a while.
Well, I think that you talk about the halftime, Nicky. He probably went into the dressing room and said, buck your ideas up or I'm going to sack the lot of you.
Well, I think the good thing about Tim Sherwood's a very pragmatic coach. I know him pretty well. When I was going to Tottenham, he was, you know, talking to me a lot about his philosophy and stuff, and he's a very pragmatic coach. He's almost like a central midfielder who just happens to be, you know, the manager. Basically, he figures out, you know, what he needs to do to get the team to win kind of now. So it's putting those round pegs in round holes. He figures out, all right, I need a couple of strong defensive midfield players. You know, I need a guy that's going to score goals, that can hold the line on his own. Maybe we're playing five in midfield. He can pretty much assess, being a very kind of like newly retired or not too long ago retired player, he can pretty much assess the team and their needs very quickly, you know, having been in that position. And also, what he's also very good at is motivating, because he used to be a captain when he was a player, I believe at Blackburn. He knows how to get success. He knows how to breed that winning mentality. And the players know that, and they instantly respect him. There hasn't been many you know, players that have captained teams that have won the Premier League. So he garners that kind of respect from players.
Well, the camera certainly loves him. With 28,098 on hand at Villa Park, Aston Villa pulling one out of their backsides. Bakuna in the 68th, Sinclair in the 89th minute before Kramaric made it twitchy bum time for a couple of minutes. Nate, we look at Leicester City. Aston Villa obviously now in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. Leicester City desperately needing anything to hang their hats on. It can't be long for Nigel Pearson now, can it?
Well, how many times have we said that? I'm just through saying it. We've said it like 20,000 times that he's still there. I'm just going to go with...
So are you saying then that he has naughty pictures of the chairman and the donkey and Cancun and the bottle of Chardonnay?
And don't forget Robin Burt's in the picture as well.
Well, of course.
I have no other logical statement for it. We've said it a million times, and he's still there. Look, I was going to say I'll err on the side of hopefulness for a Leicester City point of view. Maybe this is the blessing they need so they can focus on the Premier League. I mean, it sounds so cliche, but that's really all you can take from this. I think he's going to stay. It's already we're halfway into February. It's up to him. I think they're looking at it of almost throwing in the towel, saying we're going to finish in 20th and we don't need to shake things up going back down to the Championship. Who knows? I mean, they have no chance of staying up in the Prem. I'm giving up on them. But real quickly, I want to. I was just talking about this Blackburn Rovers team from 1995, who up until Man City was the only team besides United, Arsenal, or Chelsea to ever win the modern Premier League. That was the team that Tim Sherwood was captaining back in 1995. So a fantastic career as a captain of Blackburn Rovers, who did a hell of a job in the Cup this weekend. We'll get to that later.
Blackburn Rovers, the first team that actually bought the Premier League title when the Premier League title could be bought. If we look at Villa, Bertie, you know, they're in 18th spot. Obviously, they're tied with QPR, just a couple of points, and they can be jumping out of the relegation zone. They want to impress Tim Sherwood, but do they really want to have an FA Cup run? And yes, it's only one game to Wembley, two games to the final. But do they want that distraction? I mean, can Sherwood focus the troops?
No, I think it's not a bad thing that they won, yesterday, because they need to get that winning mentality back. So the fact that, like you said, they're only going to be playing one more game, then they're in the semi-finals at Wembley. So I think this breeds good changing room encouragement. And under Sherwood, I think you're going to see a completely different team. I mean, they are literally 13 FA Cup finals that they're going to have to be playing in the next, for the remainder of the season.
Oh, like it, Robin. Are. Very sexy. Like it.
And that's what... No, but I'm taking that from Delph. You know, so there was an interview with him literally about 2 days before Lampert was fired. And
well, at least credit him then. Jesus.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, the thing is, under Sherwood, they're going to be like Nicky said. I think they're going to be a lot more structured. He's got nothing to lose, and Villa have nothing to lose. But at the end of the day, it wasn't Lambert's fault. You've got to look at the players. The players need to be motivated for the remainder of the season. And if they can't get up for these remaining games, this is a club. This is a huge club, an old English club that could be going down.
Well, let's talk about this then. You're talking about the players being motivated. Nicky, only 28,000 showed up for an FA Cup fifth round tie that, you know, potentially puts them, you know, a game away from Wembley. What do you make of that? I mean, are the Villa fans just fatigued from the crap that's been doled out week after week?
I mean, I think, basically.
Oh, God, sounds like... Birmingham. Who does he sound like? He's got his Peter Frampton thing on.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Hey, Peter Frampton, put the synthesizer down, will you? Oh, have we lost Peter Frampton?
He sounded like a drunk R2-D2.
We've lost him. We've lost Peter Frampton.
Can you hear me?
Oh, here he is.
Hello.
That sounds much better. You sounded like Peter Frampton comes alive right there.
Yeah, exactly. Put the sauce down, Nicky. Put it down.
Yeah.
It was Metal Mickey. That was my impression right there. Basically, I just think, yes, Villa fans have been long-suffering. They have, Birmingham isn't the most affluent area in London. even teams in London are finding it hard to get draws for the FA Cup and different kind of cup competitions. But you know what? They haven't really done anything for 10 years minimum. So to expect these fans to dole out money after money after money, that's you know, eventually it's going to dry up. That well is going to dry up, my friend.
Well, it has dried up because you talk about Birmingham. West Bromwich Albion taking on West Ham United. Sorry, Bertie. Only 19,956 show up at the Hawthorns for a drubbing of epic proportions. Adey with a brace, Morrison with a screamer, Mourinho 4-0 to West Bromwich Albion, and many people were kind of talking about West Ham as possible dark horses for the FA Cup. Well, that's certainly not the case anymore. So we'll start with you, Robin. Obviously, a big loss losing Andy Carroll in midweek. The other side of the coin was that before Andy Carroll came along, Sacco and Valencia were one of the deadliest strike forces in England. Right. I mean, it's kind of like you're caught between a rock and a hard place with the loss of Andy Carroll, right?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I was actually, when I heard the news that he was out for the season, it's one of those situations where I'm actually okay with that, because Allardyce is going to have to do what he did at the beginning of the season. And you referred to Valencia and Sacco. You know, the team is more than just those two players. I mean, there is a diamond formation that's being played with Downing and Amalfitano and Song pulling the strings. So that was a weird game yesterday. And, you know, and we've seen teams, big teams, just implode. And it was one of those days.
Imploded, and Amalfitano gets Wanker of the Week award, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's stupid, yeah. I mean, it's one of those silly, silly things. He shouldn't be doing that. You know, but by that time, we were already done and dusted. I mean, you know, West Ham were taken to the sword in that game. I mean, the first 20 minutes, it was fairly even. But the moment that Idy scored, and then Morrison's goal from outside the box, I mean, that sealed the game right there. And I don't think there was any way that West Ham could get back into the game. And, Valencia and Sacco had a really poor game. But I don't think that's going to be the trend moving forward. I mean, it's just a blip on the radar. It's just a shame that, you know, West Ham were, you know, again, one game away from playing in Wembley.
Nate, will you like slap this idiot around the head? A blip on the radar, please.
A blip on the radar. We said that by the end of February that West Ham would be in the bottom half of the Premier League and that they would be out of the FA Cup. Or at least I said that. Robin would say it when no one was listening because he knew it was the truth. And when he's talking on the pod publicly for all of these loyal listeners, he still tries to put up that same front. He knows the truth.
Tony Pulis having the remarkable effect at West Bromwich Albion. The manager of the year last year in the Premiership, much to my delight, beating out Brendan, I love myself, I lick myself, I kiss myself, Rogers. His man management is probably second to none. Wouldn't you agree, Nicky? Oh, Nicky's gone. The synthesizer.
He's doing it again.
What could we say about Nicky Hollander?
Well, maybe he's eating himself.
Yeah, Nate, we'll go to you instead.
Nicky Hollander, a close personal friend of Harry Redknapp, of Nigel Pearson, of Tim Sherwood, a close personal friend of every single manager in the entire Premier League. A man has to run off and get inside information somehow, and he was getting phone calls from multiple skippers around England. So we'll be back in touch with our favorite Peter Frampton sound-alike momentarily. In the meantime, why don't we send it on back to the studio to you, Nick?
That's right. You know it. Well, you know, in the studio, we have to talk about something that's really very exciting here on World Soccer Talk. And I neglected to mention you can subscribe via Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes. And I neglected to mention the Twitter handle either. You know, meanwhile, promoting myself at Nick Webster. Did I say at Nick Webster? Well, you can go to at World Soccer Talk, hashtag WST Pod. And we have something very exciting. And it's Soccer Morning. That's right. On the World Soccer Talk Network, Soccer Morning features interviews with prominent journalists, like myself, players and coaches, in addition to taking listener calls. The popular show provides an American perspective, Nate, you're going to love this, on soccer's major discussion points, as well as an emphasis on MLS, which stands for Major League Soccer, the U.S. men's and women's teams, and developments in U.S. soccer, as well as world soccer. It's hosted by Jason Davis, and listeners can hear the show live Monday through Friday from 10 to 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time at worldsoccertalk.com/live. That's hosted by Jason Davis, Monday through Friday, 10 to 11:30 Eastern Time at worldsoccertalk.com/live. How's that for a PSA?
Very nice.
Well, beautifully played. Done. Beautifully done. All right, let's get back to the old FA Cup, and we've put your game in the books, Robin. Unfortunately, West Ham out of the cup. You're not going to win it. Sorry, not this year.
Boo-hoo.
So let's go to another game that was really poorly supported as well. And Kartik Karachanai, if you're listening, you are a complete and utter muppet. Why? Because your pick, Stoke City, got absolutely trounced by Blackburn Rovers. 4-1, 13,934. Thanks a lot, Blackburn Rovers. 13,934. Well,
there's only 35,000 people in the entire town. Go easy on them, my God.
At Ewood Park to watch Blackburn absolutely batter Stoke City. And Stoke had the nerve. I guess it must have annoyed Rovers because Peter Crouch scored again. He scored in the midweek against Newcastle, but opened up the scoring for Stoke City, the Potters. But back came Rovers, roaring back. King in the 36th, just starred in the dying moments of injury time, and then King 55. The boy only gets a hat trick. Outstanding performance, Bertie.
Yeah.
And the best part about it was that the stick that Mark Hughes was getting was unbelievable.
Yeah, no, it was...
Except Blackburn Rovers, just in case
you
forgot.
Yeah, that's the first time he'd been back to Ewood Park, I believe. And so you would, you know, you're supporting your team and you know, they gave Stoke a really good hiding. The thing about Blackburn is, and I haven't watched a lot of them in the Championship, but they actually played some really nice football. And so the turning point in that game, you know, obviously Crouch scored early for Stoke and then, you know, King got one in the 36th minute. But the turning point for that game was when Cameron got sent off. And obviously he did the naughty in the box. And so he gets sent off.
Well, let's talk about the sending off because, you know, I mean, honestly, a bunch of septics I know, septics being Yanks, septic tanks.
Yeah.
Oh, they're crying their eyes out. Oh, Jeff Cameron should never have got sent off. I mean, what was your opinion? I mean, he's got to go, right?
Yeah, no. I mean, look, you and I have watched this game long enough to know there are some referees who are going to, you know, who are going to give that and others that wouldn't. I mean, I watched a bunch of games this weekend where I thought, hold on, that's a penalty. But, you know, the referee plays on. In that situation, he was found out. And it comes at a really, really bad time for them, just before halftime. There's nothing worse than giving up a goal before halftime.
Well, you know what? As someone who does quite a bit of naughtying in the box myself, allow me to say that I think you guys are having a bit of a pretentious British mindset. We're talking about American soccer and how it's all these American skeptics or septic Yanks, whatever the hell you want to think you're clever enough by saying that we are, saying that we are being so nationalistic in our defense of Jeff Cameron, when in all reality, this is a sending off that 20 or 30 years ago in your glory days of British football on those muddy, gritty pitches of the 1980s that you know would not have been a sending off. And so you are pouring out of the hypocritical faucet yet again, Mr. Webster, and you should be a little nicer to those American listeners.
Why don't you just give it a rest? Just because your boy Cameron's been shown, you know, he's got to go for an early bath. It was well deserved. Stop being a pissy moany about it, all right?
I was just trying to defend my country.
You can't. He deserved to go. Blackburn Rovers are more than capable of surprising, I think, any of the big boys. And honestly, the way this the draw could shape up, I mean, there are some fascinating combinations where we could actually see teams from the Championship, teams from League One, find themselves at a Wembley semi-final because... Yeah. You know, if everything holds true, you know, Liverpool have to play United. But that's another story. Okay, let's move off to the baseball ground. No, I was just kidding. It's now called the iPro Stadium. It used to be called Pride Was it Pride Park?
Derby County.
Yeah. I mean, how many names are Derby going to come up with?
Baseball ground.
He's back.
Frampton's back. Frampton's alive.
Frampton's alive.
Frampton comes alive again.
Brilliant.
I was just watching the last 10 minutes of a Liverpool Spurs game just to make sure it really happened.
Okay.
Just to make sure we're still going to talk about that too, right? We're not ignoring that.
We'll get to it once we get to Liverpool. Yeah, you can't honestly, when you're the host of a show, Nate, things have to take their natural rhythm. You can't just be jumping around because the viewer then gets confused.
The listener gets confused.
Yeah. So Derby County. All right. Taking on Reading. Canoe in the 53rd. Darren Bent, who's just lights out since his loan move to the Rams. But then, oh my God, Yakubu! I'm sure Nicky's probably worked with Yakubu, right?
Now, you know what? It's one of the Africans I haven't worked with. He's a great player.
Close personal friend, though.
He's definitely rounder, fatter.
Yakubu with the winner. And for Derby County, really, this is a bit of a kick in the teeth. Currently running third in the championship, taking on Reading, who are down in 16th, 20-odd points behind. And Reading getting one on the road. I'll go to you first of all, Nate. Derby County, do you think they'll be actually quietly, but they won't publicly admit it, relieved to be out of the FA Cup so now they can concentrate on trying to get to the Premiership where they've kind of stubbed their toe the last few seasons?
Yes, absolutely. And you look at two of the teams that were actually knocked out this week, and I know we're going to get to the Arsenal-Borough match a little later, but that's second and third in the Championship who just got knocked out of the FA Cup. And so two teams that could definitely use a little extra time to prepare for every one of their, as Bertie would call them, every cup final down the stretch, trying to get an automatic
13
promotion
cup finals
spot.
Left.
You got to love it. But hey, man, I mean, I know I live in a Reading, California, and love to Reading, England, and love to the Yak. I mean, where on earth has the Yak been for all this time? His first goal in the FA Cup in 2 or 3 years or something like that. It was fantastic. What a story. And yeah, come on, Reading. How about it?
Reading move on. So that takes us to Crystal Palace versus Liverpool. So before we get to the Palace versus Liverpool game, let's Nate and Nicky have it out over the midweek thriller at Anfield, where Mario Balotelli, and he really is a miserable bastard, isn't he? scores the winner, can't even be bothered to celebrate. I mean, can he even be bothered to do anything? That's the question I need to know the answer to. But it really was a thriller, a great advert for British football, as they like to say. Tottenham are probably the better team. Yes, most definitely the better team on the night, but Liverpool finding a way to win. So let's give it to the victor, the spoils of victory, to Nate Aburea. Talk about Liverpool-Tottenham before we talk about Liverpool-Crystal Palace.
Well, in the spirit of sportsmanship, I must first acknowledge my good friend Nicky Hollander, who followed through on our Twitter sphere bet and actually posted a picture on Twitter for his, I mean, what do you have, 55 billion followers out there that saw you wearing a Liverpool shirt as a result of following through on a bet. Talk about a true gentleman right there, Nicky Hollander. You got to love it. I would have done the same if Spurs would have won. We stick to these things. And on that note,
Nate, you've only got 3 followers though.
Hey, we're growing. We're growing this thing. We're up there. We're growing. We're trending in the right direction, as the stat man would say. No, I want to talk about something real quick, just to sum this up. This whole Liverpool Tottenham match that was just, you call it a fantastic advert for British football. If you are just a fan of the British game, you need to join forces for something that I'm calling the Totpool Party. And that is the combination of those two clubs, what that match represented. I mean, improving modern football to begin with. How about promoting young British players? I mean, the young British stars that were a part of that match, from Sturridge playing his part to Harry Kane scoring again for Spurs. I mean, I know Daniel Raheem Sterling's involvement, Adam Lallana, all these different young British talents. I mean, you talk about promoting the British game, providing an attractive product to everyone watching, using long balls as a last resort. I mean, the shot of Pochettino on the sideline telling one of his players to not use the long ball, and they actually had it on NBC where they read his lips and he tells them, hey, whatever we can do to keep the ball on the ground. I mean, it's just absolutely fantastic. And so let's screw over at all costs everything that is Manchester United, Manchester City, Arsenal, Chelsea, and even those little striped Southern Sailors down at Southampton. Because if you were a fan of the English game, you should be hoping that a miracle can happen and Tottenham and Liverpool can find their way into third and fourth. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but that's what you should be hoping for if you were a fan of the advancement of English football.
So, Nicky, your thoughts on the game? Obviously, massively disappointed. It certainly could be a momentum killer.
Yeah, you know what? I think, though, I usually am very disappointed if Spurs lose, but this is one game where I actually could not be disappointed because, you know, Spurs went to Anfield, and there's been so many teams going to Anfield, Chelsea, Man City, who tried to just, like, close up shop and hit him on the break. And, you know, it really looked like Spurs were kind of the home team, even though Liverpool were also going for Spurs. Spurs were, like, had the midfield, and they were, like, going at them. And it was two teams with two really good managers who really want to kind of beat the opposition and not just bore them into submission. It was an amazing game at 2-2. You know, one part of you goes, I'll just hold that. But that's not the Pochettino way. You have to live and die by it. And he pushed up and they were going for the win. And the fullback, you know, the centre-backs were too high. And Liverpool have the ability to catch you on the break. And it was, you know, I can hold my hands up and say I was not disappointed. I was just like, that is, if you're going to go down, that is how you're going to go down.
Finally, Tottenham Hotspur with a little bit of backbone. Talking of young English players, off to Selhurst Park, where 20,391 braved the cold London night air as Palace took on Liverpool. Fraser Campbell, young English player. Daniel Sturridge, young English player. And Adam Lallana, young English player, the goal scorers on this particular occasion. Although I thought, for my money, the player of the game was the much-maligned Belgian keeper, Mignolet, who pulled off a couple of great saves to keep Liverpool in the game. And Palace, you know, looking for that Alan Pardew effect, don't get it. They're out of the cup, and perhaps I think Pardew will be secretly happy. Meanwhile, another opportunity for Liverpool to add silverware. Let's go to you, Nate. What were your thoughts on the game? Because Liverpool looked to be not firing on all cylinders. Do you think that midweek extravaganza had kind of taken a bit of gas out of them?
Absolutely, though. I think this is also a testament to a side with momentum that they were by no means firing on all cylinders for the entire first half and came out in a 20-minute spell to start the second half and were firing closer to on all cylinders, maybe still not at their full best, and they still found a way to win a 2-1 match at a stadium that's known as a bit of a fortress over the last year or so, and that we've got our own, that Liverpool has their own horrid history in quite recently. But we won't discuss that.
The match
this week and that whole thing,
Chris,
that whole, you know, 11 minute thing that happened back in May of last year. Yes. Anyway, this match, I love the two characters that I come out really thinking about afterwards, and that is the goalkeeper, who you already referenced, Mr. Simon Mignolet, and one Mario Balotelli. And 2 months ago, you talk about Balotelli scoring the winner in the Tottenham match and not showing any emotion. Well, you know what? So be it, because he's a lunatic. We all know that. He's an absolute lunatic. He's a mental case, and if he's going to go out and make the runs that he's making, if he's going to have a smile on his face every now and again, and he's going to make the right runs, and he's not going to be selfish on the ball, he's going to link up with people the way he was in that Palace match late in the second half, setting up the free kick on a fantastic free kick that got rebounded straight to Lallana. I'm just saying, so be it. And I got so much flack a month ago for saying that a healthy Daniel Sturridge could be the catapult to Mario Balotelli not being done at Liverpool. And now look what's happening right now. And I got to go back again a couple of months or a month and a half or so to the new year when you just absolutely blasted me, Nick, for saying that Mignolet was being poorly treated, that Mignolet was a keeper that still had plenty left in the tank in a Liverpool shirt. And people were talking about, I mean, this was all over every English media platform of Petr Cech being the savior for Liverpool Football Club. And talk about an impulse buy, going out and getting Petr Cech in the transfer window to replace Mignolet and that god-awful Aussie Brad Jones. I mean, Mignolet had plenty left. He needed to be given his second life. He was, thank goodness. Mignolet and
Balotelli. Yeah, but his second life, I mean, his second life was a miracle because Brad Jones got bloody injured.
It has me thinking that Brendan Rodgers is the genius that you just won't admit he is. Maybe he had it all planned out. He had it all planned out, and I know he looks like he's an undertaker at a high class funeral parlor. But I don't know. He's an interesting character. I think he's doing quite well right now. So you should eat your words for the time being.
I want to talk to Nicky Hollander about Balotelli. You're a striker yourself, Nicky. Excuse me. Got a little tickle in the throat.
Brendan Rodgers voodoo right there. I know.
What do you make of Balotelli? Do you like him? Do you think he's a good goal scorer? Is he the kind of player that can help Liverpool to the promised land of Champions League football, to silverware?
I don't think he's a particularly great player. I don't think he's a bad player. I think he's quite a, you know, he has moments of individual genius, which is, you know, I think a little too far, a few and far between. I think most of his goals are scored, you know, more individually rather than within the team concept of knowing kind of how the team wants to build up and how the team wants to finish. I think the goal against Spurs was pretty unusual for him to get on the end of a cross. It's normally like a self-made shot. He's good. I think Liverpool will, you know, probably at the end of the season, let him go. And I think they'll kind of like bring up their really good talent that they obviously have in their youth setup and stuff. Because I think Brendan Rodgers is that kind of a guy. He's going to want a striker that's more involved in the build-up play and more involved in the understanding rather than that individual player. So he's good. He can, you know, but I don't think he's great. I think, you know, Liverpool will get rid of him at the end of the year.
Bertie, you're one for finances. Liverpool paid £16 million for him. What would they be happy receiving?
Oh, God.
A case of Chardonnay, perhaps?
Yeah, probably. I think they would probably cut their losses at maybe 10, but I don't think there are many clubs out there that would really take him on. I do like his attitude in the last few games, and, you know, granted he doesn't smile, but, I mean, I've noticed that he seems to have a better attitude towards playing, and you could see that against Crystal Palace, and you could see that against Spurs. So I don't think they've completely given up on him, but there's, you know, however many games left, you know, for the remainder of the season for Liverpool, you know, playing in the Europa League as well. So I still think he can make a big difference. But the thing about Balotelli, and I always remember him at Man City, the one thing that he scored a lot of goals was penalties. He was always the penalty taker. And Man City, when he was playing for them, they got a lot of penalties. So he got in that situation where he was the one taking it, and that inflated the number of goals that he was scoring. So the fact that he's only scored, you know, 3 goals for Liverpool, I think, or 2 maybe, actually doesn't really surprise me, because he's not the penalty taker, you know. So that's going to be Gerrard who's going to do that. So,
and Gerrard's probably got 6 from the spot this year, right, Nate? 6 or 7? Because referees just fall in love with Liverpool. Anybody falls in the box with a red shirt, got to be a penalty.
It's got to be in his final season before he goes to that disaster known as Los Angeles Galaxy.
That's right.
3 goals, by the way, for Mario Balotelli. One, what could have been a winner against Ludogorets, but then the score was then tied at 1-1, Champions League match day one. And then how did Liverpool actually win that match? Was on a dodgy penalty for Steven Gerrard in stoppage time in front of the cup. You got to love it. And then won a goal against Swansea, a big goal in the League Cup, and now this match winner at Tottenham. Those are all 3 goals from Mario Balotelli.
The thing is, Nate, that you know when he scored those goals, so which says something about him. 3 goals. That's a poor return for 60.
That makes each of them worth a little over £5.3 million. Yes, indeed.
Exactly.
Talking of money, Bradford City, they took on Sunderland, and it was the only game not televised by the BBC, those bastards, denying Bradford City £250,000 worth of TV revenue as they took on Sunderland in the 5th round of the FA Cup. And that's just actually highlights the madness that is the money being that we've just signed the new £5.5 billion deal for the Premier League. And when you look at the wages of the big stars, the Wayne Rooneys, the Yaya Toure's, where they get £250,000 a week. Well, Bradford City, £250,000 would just about do their season. They have moved to the sixth round at the Coral Windows Stadium. What a great name for a stadium, huh? Really evokes, you know, charm, doesn't it? Coral Windows. 24,021 on hand. John O'Shea with an own goal, giving the Bantams the lead. And then John Stead, who couldn't score in a brothel when he played for Sunderland, moves to Bradford City and bites the hand that used to feed him. Bradford City, after their heroics in the previous round, beating Chelsea 4-2 in what many consider to be the greatest shock in FA Cup history, and I think it was right now. Currently ninth place in League One, taking on Sunderland. We know about their struggles in the Premier League. But we'll start with you, Nicky. Bit of a bog-like pitch at Bradford City, but I tell you what, the Bantams, they play some football, son. They like to knock it around. And do you think that if they get a favourable draw, I mean, the manager right now is saying, you know what, I want to bring any team back to the Coral Windows Stadium, where the chairman's saying, oh, just get us to Old Trafford, please, for crying out loud. But do you think that Bradford City have in them something that the Premier League teams fear?
Absolutely. I think Bradford City, listen, it doesn't get any harder than being 2-0 down at Stamford Bridge and scoring four in a row. So if they can do that, they pretty much can do anything to anybody, you know, on any given day. So, yes. Is it likely they're going to go all the way? No. But can they? 100% yes, because it doesn't get any harder than what they've done. So they're a fantastic, you know, old traditional English team. You know, I remember the heartache of their stadium burning down and all that kind of tragedy. If Bradford City could go all the way, you know what? That would be just phenomenal. And they absolutely can do it.
Well, Nate, to my point that Bradford City play a bit of football, if you go to the stats, this one absolutely blows me away, because we're talking about Bradford City League One, where in League One we all think about let's thump it forward to the centre forward who knocks it down, and you know it's two passes and a goal. Bradford City had 58% of the possession against Sunderland, managed by Gos Poyet, who is a very possession orientated manager.
Yeah, and actually that transitions into something that I wanted to point out from this match that I found you love that word, troubling. The Sunderland fans. Really turning on their manager publicly. I mean, within the stadium, and then with various comments outside the grounds that were covered. The Sunderland fans going off on Gus in a way that I did not see coming. I know Sunderland's had a little bit of a pick me up in the Prem over the last month from the bottom that they'd been at. I mean, with picking up Defoe and such. But you look back to the Premier League standings; they're only 2 points. Ahead of Villa in 18th. I know there are three places above them, but just 2 points ahead of 18th place. So that's a bit of a sticky situation there with Sunderland, and troubling to see Gus Poyet get that level of abuse from his own fans after getting knocked out of the cup. But my goodness, I mean, Bradford have the capability to revive this competition. A competition that needs a great story, that needs a bit of reviving. And I've talked to so many people lately, and everyone throws out this question, well, has the cup lost its magic? And you're given these attendance figures. I mean, and that would lead you to believe that, yeah, it has lost a bit of its luster. It's looked as this second or even third rate type thing that was once so prestigious to everyone within the country and even folks who knew about it around the world. And a story like this could do a lot, actually, to bring the beauty of the FA Cup back to a worldwide stage, seeing what the Bantams are doing. So I obviously Liverpool are still in the competition, so I'm hoping that the Reds can get all the way to the final. But if not that, I'm pulling for Bradford all the way.
But on that note, you know, you look at what the broadcasters want. The broadcasters want Liverpool, Manchester United in the final at Wembley. No arguments, right? That's what the broadcasters want. Do the fans want Bradford City versus Reading in the final at Wembley?
No, you'd go right in between that. You'd say they want Bradford City, Manchester United in the final at Wembley. But it's interesting you threw out as kind of a half-joke, half-serious thing that Bradford's got to be thinking, God, just get us to Old Trafford in the next round. Just get us the away gates at Old Trafford. But what are the away gates going to be at Old Trafford? Our attendance number is going to be a little down at Old Trafford for that match.
No,
you know,
because those greedy bastards at Old Trafford, the brains behind it insist that the season ticket holders have to go to the FA Cup games. Otherwise, they lose a Premier League game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you believe that? I can't believe that, but there's some very small fine print. Well, talking of big crowds then, at the home of Arsenal FC, 59,823, only like 500, excuse me, below capacity, to take on Middlesbrough. Giroud with a two-minute double taking care of Borough. Watched this game. I thought Arsenal were absolutely... excuse me.
Nick, do you know what a cough drop is?
Oh, I know. I mean, coughing, honestly. I slag off everybody for the coughing. Arsenal were sensational. I mean, the football they played was absolutely ridiculous. But I do think Middlesbrough definitely have one eye on the championship table. But Bertie, let's go to you. I think that Arsenal absolutely have to retain the FA Cup because it's about the only chance they've got of silverware.
Well, if it's for the sake of keeping Wenger in a job, then yes, yeah, they do have to. And but I think the path is there for them to make it to the final. And you know, you joke about Bradford and you joke about Reading being in the final. There's absolutely no way that either one of those teams are going to be in the final. If obviously
you are talking complete and utter bollocks, mate. Because if the draw goes a certain way, hold on.
If Arsenal match up against Manchester United, then yes, I understand what you're saying. But there's still a few games left there. But yeah, no. Look, the thing about Arsenal is that they've been having an up and down sort of season, but they were sublime in that game today. And I don't normally say that about them, but Cazorla pulling all the strings. They've got all their players coming back who are healthy now. Okay, so the one player that they probably won't have back is Ramsey. But they played a really good game. I mean, they killed it off. Giroud killed that game off in the space of 2 minutes in the first half. And I felt sorry for Borough because I think they've done well. But to just respond to what you were saying about Middlesbrough, yeah, they've got an eye on getting back in the Premier League, somewhere where they haven't been for a very long time. And under their new manager, they're going about it in the right way. So, it was a good game. It could have been a cricket score if it wasn't for, you know, the Borough keeper pulling off a number of fantastic saves. But, yeah, I mean, it was a decent game to watch.
Robin, I got to speak for our massive Bradford City listenership here on the World Soccer Talk pod and this Prem and FA Cup review show. How on earth can you say that a team that scored four goals against Chelsea, against the invincible Chelsea, team has no chance to get to the final at Wembley?
That was just a freak result. And, you know, watching that game today was absolutely garbage. That was one of the most horrific games I'd seen for a long time. I mean, that pitch is an absolute disgrace. So the only advantage that Bradford have is taking them back to a pitch like that. But otherwise, no, they don't stand a chance.
Don't stand a chance. Robin Burt, always very harsh when he has to be. Well, if you've got an opinion and you want to give Bertie some business, at World Soccer Talk, hashtag WSTPod. And don't forget to subscribe via Stitcher, TuneIn and iTunes. Hashtag WSTPod. And don't forget, Soccer Morning. It's a new show. It features interviews with prominent journalists, players and coaches, in addition to taking listener calls. Yes, it's almost like Fox Football calling. Fox Football phoning, something like that. The popular show provides an American perspective on soccer's major discussion points, as well as an emphasis on Major League Soccer, the U.S. men's and women's teams, and developments in U.S. soccer, as well as world soccer. It's hosted by Jason Davis. Listeners can hear the show live Monday to Friday from 10 to 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time at World Soccer Talk, worldsoccertalk.com/ live. What's that noise in the background? Who's doing that? It's got
to
be
Nikki. That's a bleep. That's a bleep coming from the radio gods, knowing that I'm about to say two words to you that I shouldn't say. And the next time you say soccer, I'm definitely going to tell you to something off.
It's definitely got to be Nikki Hollander. I mean, there's no. Of course it's you. All right, so let's.
It was Frampton's Didier guitar.
Drunk. Yes. Peter Frampton.
He's getting, telling me he's going back to Arsenal.
Frampton's getting some feedback. Okay, tomorrow Preston takes on Manchester United. So let's talk about this quarterfinal where we have West Brom, Blackburn Rovers, Reading, Liverpool, Villa, Bradford City, Arsenal, and I've predicted Manchester United to win the FA Cup, so that they'll beat Preston North End. Boys, where do we stand right now? Nikki Hollander. Who wins the FA Cup? Because I know you've bounced around all over the place.
I'm going to say the winners of the FA Cup will be Liverpool.
Ooh, dearie me. Nate Aburea.
They will go for it.
I mean, I don't know if you're like throwing out bait for me or what I'm supposed to do here, but how can I not second that? I mean, the way they're playing in the competition, the last two victories have been on the road. I mean, you go back to that Bolton match in the replay that was just that was the magic of the cup, and that was such a special match for the fans in Bolton, a town where I was once, no joke, chased down a cobblestone road by wild pigs.
Well, it's
I mean,
a
that's,
shame
that's
they didn't
what we're talking
bloody
about.
Catch you because Bolton deserved to win that game. Liverpool,
I know they did, and Liverpool
stole it. Ida Gudjonsson, you bastard. Why didn't you finish off that chance?
Okay. When you say you were chased down the road by pigs, are we talking about actual pigs or the police after the game?
No, actual. That's how Bolton this experience was. It was actual. We were on our bikes down a cobblestone road about a half mile from the Reebok Stadium back in 2005, chased down a cobblestone road by wild. I don't know if they were wild. I don't know if some Bolton farmer had let them go, but actually chased down the road by pigs. It was quite frightening. But you look at the last two FA Cup victories for Liverpool, and they've been the magic of the cup. They've been games where they've been by far the inferior side in the first 45 minutes and even into the second half. And the Bolton match, the Palace match here this past weekend.
Shall I tell you what the perfect result for Nate would be? It would be Liverpool to win the cup, last-minute penalty by Steven Gerrard, and then 30 seconds to go, he does his cruciate ligaments and cannot play for the Galaxy.
Yeah. Oh, I would not. No.
That's what he wants.
That's the level. You know what? It's funny. That's where I'll cap off my hate for the Galaxy. I would never wish ill on Mr. Stevie G. No, what I'd love is for him to score that goal and then open up the shirt to an undershirt that has written across it.
This one
is for Nick Bloody Webster, that guy that just slags me off on that World Soccer Talk pod because he listens to it all the time. No, Liverpool could easily win the cup. It's been the magic of it. They've come back from 1-0 down to win 2-1 the last two. They've got magic on their side. They're going to finish in fourth and win the cup. There you go. How you love it?
Bertie, West Ham United out of the cup. Who are you pulling for now?
Well, I think for the love of the game, I think you've got to go for Liverpool. I mean, as much as I love watching Arsenal play, this actually means something to Liverpool. I mean, this will be...
You're not going to jump on let's do it for Stevie, because that's what's going to happen right now. I want you all to know, now the quarterfinals have started, it's let's do it for Stevie.
No, this is going to be the first piece of silverware for Rodgers, and you're going to hate this, but if he gets that first bit of silverware, he's going to go on to bigger and better things, whether you like it or not. But, It would be amazing for Arsenal to go back to back and win it. I think that is quite incredible actually. But I think it's going to be Liverpool's chance this time, and maybe the gods will be shining down on them.
Well, Webster, like who was the last side to retain the cup?
What, back to back like that?
Who was the last back to back side? It's been quite a while.
I think it was Arsenal.
Was it? What, no. Back in the '70s?
No, 2000s. 2000.
It was probably United.
Really?
It was probably 2003.
They used to play at Cardiff.
Statman, where the hell are you?
United, I bet you.
I'll look it up. How about
that? Go on Google, please.
Yeah, someone's Googling. Keep the listeners amused while I look it up, please. someone say something interesting for crying out loud.
On this edition of the World Soccer Talk Pod, we talk about lots of soccer from England to America. Peter Frampton comes alive. Robin Burke guzzles a whole box of Chardonnay. Nick Webster doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. And that lunatic in Reading does something strange again. Join us every Sunday night here on the World Soccer Talk Pod.
Thank you very much, Nate. And meanwhile, I've finally found it. Okay, so the last Chelsea. Oh, dear. Chelsea. 2009, beat Everton 2-1, and then followed it up the year later, beating Portsmouth 1-0.
Oh, there we go.
Okay, let's put a wrap on this FA Cup fifth round. Nicky Hollander, highlights for you, mate.
Highlights for me were Bradford City going through and the fact that I didn't have to...
Frampton comes alive. Thank you, Frampton. Nate?
I'm hoping that we've given enough... Merseyside love to the Reds, and we've just absolutely sucked on the nipples of Bradford City here for quite enough time. This match coming up, the only one that we haven't reviewed because it's the only one that hasn't happened yet, that one at the Deepdale Stadium tomorrow between Preston North End and Manchester United. That is a ground that I have actually been to a match at, had one of the best footballing experiences of my entire life. Saw American Eddie Lewis. Talk about American soccer. The great left wing back, left attacking midfielder. He was attacking that day for Preston and teamed up with David Nugent for a fantastic 2-2 draw against Wolves back in 2005. Soft spot for Preston. That's what I'm hoping the magic of the FA Cup, the ultimate moment of brilliance will be in this FA Cup fifth round, is a P&E victory against the scum.
Go on, Bertie.
All right, three things here. So the possibility of Villa being in an FA Cup final, which would be hilarious. Scott Sinclair actually playing football. It's true. He actually played some football and he scored a goal. And then at halftime during the Bradford-Sunderland game, which was sort of comical when the groundsmen came out with their pitchforks and they're sort of mixing the mud because there's no grass on the pitch there. All they were doing was just moving the mud around. And I couldn't think that it was just... It was like 1930s watching, are these players playing in no man's land between the trenches during World War One. It was hilarious.
Fantastic FA Cup. You got to love it. For Nicky Hollander, Nate Aburea, Robin Bird, I am Nick Webster. You can find me on Twitter at Nick Webster. And I'll let Nate actually... Nate, you didn't give out your Twitter address. Quickly do it right now.
Well, it's at DarthNader99, but we're taking suggestions on what to change it to. So let us know at World Soccer Talk, hashtag WSTPod, at DarthNader99. But for how long?
It definitely needs to be changed.
It's going to change quickly. We're open to suggestions. Please, listeners, let us know what you want.
Hey, Nate, can I give you a suggestion?
Brendan Rodgers, love boy, something like that.
At Knobhead or something like that?
At Knobhead, yes.
That's actually my metal band name.
Knobheads.
Stevie G is my boyfriend.
Yeah, we're gonna call it a day. Thank goodness the Premier League is back next week. Bye for now.
Hashtag Webster out.